Lewis.
And this is Ian.
Welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
So, what are we talking about this week, Ian?
This week, Lewis, we are talking about Touch of Evil.
Touch of Evil. Orson Welles classic film. So this is a film that neither of us have seen, but been recommended to us by quite a few people over the years.
Yeah, over the last decade we've been doing this.
Steadfastly refusing to watch it. Nope. Going to wait until we do a 101 Films podcast and then we can watch it.
Yeah, it's certainly been bobbing around, hasn't it, in the background.
It's one of those films you're like, oh, I've heard about this. Everyone says it's amazing. I really should watch it one day.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for me anyway, it is a film I'd heard lots of, or heard of, and I knew it was an Orson Welles film. But other than that, I knew very little about it.
I didn't even
realise Charlton Heston was in it.
I know. As a Mexican.
Well, we'll come to that in a bit, I guess. But we should do the pitch.
I guess what the pitch is...
Orson Welles, looking like the man he turned into, frames someone, but does he? Question mark.
The end? Question mark.
It's a difficult one to pitch, I think, simply because it's actually quite a complicated plot.
Mm. It's just a typical film noir in the sense there's lots of crossing and double crossing and, you know, the femme fatales and what have ye.
Very, very simply... Charlton Heston plays a Mexican district attorney who's married to an American lady, played by Janet Leigh, and they're on a border town, right on the border between Mexico and the US. A car bomb goes off on the American side, but it was planted on the Mexican side, so basically Charlton Heston's character has to work with Orson Welles' character, and he plays this massive, corpulent monster of a police officer, that's, you know, kind of slightly seedy. He looked like and this is a nerdy reference. You know the slightly dodgy police officer in the Batman comic books. What's his name?
Bullock.
Bullock. That's it. He looked like Bullock. I'm sure Bullock was based on.
It was the other way around. Orson Welles saw Batman the animated series and thought, you know, that would be a good idea for a film.
Barely a podcast goes by without one of us mentioning Batman. Anyway, and so that's it. And then the whole film's just about Charlton Heston slowly became more and more suspicious of Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Glad you got that in there.
It is a very good film. I did like it. Perhaps my expectations were slightly high because it's an Orson Welles film. It's just an alright film noir film, I think. Or a pretty good film noir.
I think it's got moments of real brilliance. Definite moments of real brilliance. There are a few scenes that really kind of stand out really
I mean, it's incredibly well shot.
Yeah, it's very good. I think it's a little bit too long, to be honest. It could have been condensed down into a much kind of shorter, nippier film. But yeah, there are some moments of brilliance in it. And like you said, the camera angles as well, you know... When I was watching it, it was like, yeah, you can tell this is a Welles film, you know.
Yeah.
The camera's in the floor.
So far ahead of its time, it's incredible. Yeah. The way the camera moves still looks modern today. But other bits of it, I feel, perhaps haven't aged as well. But anyway, before we're jumping ahead of ourselves. So yeah, as we've mentioned, directed by Orson Welles, who also stars.
Yeah.
With Charlton Heston, Janet Leigh, and lots of little kind of cameo roles almost.
Zsa Zsa Gabor
is she has like quite high billing, but she's only in it for like 20 seconds or something.
Yeah, not even that. I don't think she basically stands in the background. She's got like one line or something.
Yeah. A whole host of stars.
A cornucopia of stars.
Before we go on, should we do the trivia quiz?
Yay!
Hi there, podcasts. Welcome to the groovy section of the podcast. That's right, it's the trivia quiz. Nice.
Trivia quiz. Oh, I do like the trivia quiz. Okay, question one. The film was given B-movie status and shown as the second feature in a double bill. What was the A film?
Ooh.
It's quite a hard one. I thought I'd fox you with a difficult question to start with.
Right, okay.
Funny enough, the A film has a very B-movie title.
I don't know.
No? Okay.
No.
The answer was The Female Animal.
female animal. Yeah. Like, it's a really B movie character. Forgive my ignorance, I've never heard of the female animal.
Well, you know, it's canon now, you know. It's up there with Citizen Kane and Touch of Evil. Okay, question two. Like Sean Connery, Charlton Heston went through a 70s sci-fi phase. Name one of the two classic 70s sci-fi films he started.
Omega Man, Soylent Green.
Yeah. Those were the two I had in mind.
Okay.
Omega Man and Soylent Green. Okay, and last question. Which actor from Touch of Evil appeared on the front cover of the Sgt. Pepper album?
I'm going to say Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Okay. Well, you're wrong. It was Marlene Dietrich.
Oh, I knew it was going to be one of the two. And they had equal billing as well. Oh, annoying. Right, okay.
So one out of three.
Oh, that's not great. Okay, my three questions. What was film did Orson Welles attempt to make after this one, ultimately failing as future directors who also attempted to make this film also did?
Okay, I think I know this. I think it's Don Quixote.
Correct. Yes. It is. Well done. Second question. Today, by sheer coincidence, is the anniversary of an important event in Orson Welles' life. What is that event?
Is it his birthday?
All right. It is. Today is his birthday.
What a happy coincidence. It is. It's like we planned it.
Born in 1915.
God.
Yeah. You say, he would have been in his 90s now. He'd lived. You've won. You've already got two. But we'll see if you can get an. You're playing for points now, Lewis. Playing for points when we total all these out. Orson Welles, in the 30s, worked on the Federal Theatre Project, which was a New Deal program to get people working, basically.
This is a politics question.
We're getting to it. In particular, they got the Federal Theatre Project just got actors and playwrights to work, and they were paid by the government to put on pieces of art to keep people occupied. Isn't that a great thing?
How long is this question?
I just want to say, isn't that an amazing thing? Can you imagine the government now doing that?
Spending money on something that doesn't make money? No, they wouldn't even think about it.
Exactly, yeah. And all that was to realise the value of work and also to realise the value of art as well. What an incredible thing. Anyway, Orson Welles directed a play, a Shakespeare play.
Okay.
It was actually for the Negro Theatre Unit. That was actually what it was called. I'm not just calling that myself. it was the Negro Theatre Unit put on this Shakespearean play. He also made a film of this Shakespearean play a few years later.
I think I know this.
What play was it?
I think it's Othello.
Right, okay, it was actually Macbeth.
Oh, no, because I know he did Othello.
He did do Othello, and funny enough, even though it was the main, I didn't make a note of his name, but the main actor who played Macbeth in the Negro Theatre Unit's production, one day he was ill, and Orson Welles went on stage in blackface and did it himself.
Nice.
He actually called it Voodoo Macbeth. It was all done from a kind of set in sort of Haiti sort of version of Macbeth. Yeah, it sounds quite interesting. So Lewis, you got 2 out of 3. So you did win.
I did win, but it wasn't a landslide.
It wasn't a landslide, not this time, no. So, Orson Welles.
Orson Welles. Awesome Orson Welles.
He really does dominate this film in...
in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Because he's massive.
Exactly. It does feel like you're almost sucked into the gravitational pull of Welles.
I just love the way he delivers his lines in this film. Like, he doesn't really care what he's saying. It's just like, rah, rah, rah. He's just kind of like, growls out these lines.
Yeah, initially, I was a little bit like, okay, I'm going to have to really listen hard here to quite...
turn up the volume.
Yeah, it was like, rah.
I did have to turn up the volume twice.
Once you kind of get used to his delivery and you kind of get into the rhythm of the way he's delivering the lines, it's fine.
But I now see what James Gordon-Levitt was basing his character on in Brick. Just going to mumble and growl.
Similar to Orson Welles, who underwent 8 hours of makeup every morning to look like that.
Like Tommy from Third Rock from the
Sun. Well, that's the funny thing about this, because when I first saw it, I was like, oh my God, I forgot how much Orson Welles just put on weight and aged. And then as I kind of got a closer, I was like, oh, hang on, no, that's all prosthetics and makeup.
An uncanny glimpse into
the future. Yeah, it was, sadly. It was just an image of what Orson was going to look like in a few years' time. Well, several years' time. Mm.
You get really sucked into this character, his motivations and his background as well, how he's ended up, so this kind of corrupt, obscene kind of cop, it's...
Yeah, because there's a long sequence where he's in a bar and he's just talking about his past. Mm. I mean, you get the feeling, you get the sense that he is corrupt, but perhaps is still one of the good guys, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of
claims... He does it from a place... He feels like he's doing the right thing by doing it. It's not like he's taking kickbacks.
No.
He feels he's framing people who are guilty.
Yes.
He's just not bothering to get the evidence.
Yeah, I mean, he genuinely believes that people, you know, are guilty, and he just wants to make sure they go behind bars. But, of course, it's not entirely... You know, in some cases, you just don't know, do you?
No, of course, no. Because, I mean, originally he was only supposed to star in this film, wasn't he? He was just going... Because he'd been in Europe for a while. I think he'd sort of, after his initial successes, gone over to Europe. And
yeah,
sort of,
he fell out of favour with the studios, basically for making films that didn't really make any money.
Well, Citizen Kane...
Yeah, Citizen Kane lost money.
Yeah.
Terrible film, Citizen Kane. Dreadful. She never should have been made.
Well, he just... Yeah, and
I'm joking.
He angered a lot of the wrong people as well with that. You know, he sort of stirred up a hornet's nest of quite some powerful invested interests. And yeah, so he lived in Europe, and this was kind of his comeback, wasn't it? Comeback to Hollywood, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Charlton Heston really wanted to work with him, which is why I did the film in the first place.
Well, wasn't Charlton Heston under the impression that He was like, oh, okay, Orson Welles is going to direct, right? And he was like, yes. Because they really wanted Charlton Heston in.
Sandra, get Orson Welles on the phone.
So originally, I mean, initially they just wanted Orson Welles to act. Mm. And then it was kind of Charlton Heston insisting that he really wanted to be directed by Welles. Similar to Janet Leigh, I understand that who plays Charlton Heston's wife. And she... Initially, her agent turned the offer down because he didn't think it was that much money. And so Orson Welles did a quite clever thing where he wrote a letter and just said to Janet and just said, "Oh, I'm really looking forward to working with you." So then she ended up sacking her agent and like screamed abuse at him, saying, "How dare you? You know, it doesn't matter about the money. This is a chance to be directed by one of the greatest directors ever. Yeah, you idiot."
Ah, oh, good old Orson.
He was a canny fellow, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I really want to read more about Orson Welles. I've found out some interesting facts about him just kind of researching this podcast.
Yeah, I did as well. Yeah, I just have a look.
Apparently, one of the things, he was asked to be Darth Vader, the voice of Darth Vader.
It's just madness.
That would be good though, wouldn't it?
It would. He has the...
I am your father.
Yeah, but just in Orson Welles' voice.
Yeah, that was more Laurence Olivier, really, wasn't it?
There is a way of doing an impression of him, but I don't think either of us are good enough to get there.
You have to gargle marbles.
He's got nothing like, and yeah, I can't do it.
Go certain, on, do it. No, you have to I do can't. It.
He's got that kind of deep. It's deep, but slight. It's a weird voice. It's deep yet light at the same time. Do you know what I mean? No. By your blank face. But of course, Orson Welles isn't the only star of the film. We also have Charlton Heston.
Yep, the famous Mexican actor, Charlton Heston.
Yeah, well, okay, let's get that out of the way. Charlton Heston plays a Mexican in some... Well, I don't think that's a natural tan. Let's put it that way.
Very strange cast. I mean, Charlton Heston is your typical kind of like... He was the all-American kind of kid, you know. It was quite bizarre seeing him playing kind of a Mexican character. Because he doesn't look Mexican at all. Let's put it out there.
No, but with the makeup, with the suits.
That was makeup?
I know. We've glimpsed behind the curtain here. Yes, he was wearing makeup.
Oh,
well, he's kind of got like... It's not blackface. It's not quite that extreme. No. But it's
not quite Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, no. And he doesn't put on a terrible Mexican voice or anything like that.
Basically he doesn't try. It's the Sean Connery school of accents.
No, and you know what? That works. Because then you can just concentrate on what he's saying.
Exactly.
His hair has been dyed black. He has a dark moustache. He looks Mexican. You know, for a second, I didn't when he first walks on screen, I didn't recognise him. And then it was only until it was close up, and you just see, the classic square jaw. But from a distance, I thought it was a convincing kind of makeup job. And his suits, I think they actually went to the guy who designed suits for Mexican officials.
Did they?
Yeah, he probably looks the part.
Really?
He does. I mean, the suit, it does look Mexican. I don't know why. Yeah, but it does suit it. It does look Mexican. I don't know why. I don't know what I mean by that, but it does.
I don't know either, because I was completely unconvinced. But,
really?
Yes, completely. But
Would you have preferred if he'd done it more like, yeah, more like Manuel from 42 Hours? Suddenly tired, I don't care.
Well, like you said,
I can speak English. I learned it from a book. Perhaps Orson Welles can knock him on his head with a spoon. And
oh, I mean, like the English policeman from Hello, Hello. It was just pissing by your window.
Oh, what a great film that would be. Oh, I mean, I'm almost tempted to jump forward to a good idea for a movie just so we could do the French captain from Hello, Hello with Manuel as Mike Vargas. Was it Vargas?
Vargas.
Vargas. Yeah. In a remake of yeah. Touch of Evil.
Hank Quinlan. As René.
Oh, Orson Welles would be a good René.
He would be, wouldn't he?
If we were going to remake...
You little stupid woman!
Alright, I'm struggling to think...
I'm imagining Orson Welles as René now. This is going to be an amazing Hello, Hello.
I mean, really, Orson Welles would be brilliant as René. He really would be fantastic as René.
Marlene Dietrich as Yvette. Oh, this is the great film that ever
you
got
could
made.
Take the cast of Touch of Evil and just place them all as different characters in Hello, Hello. It would work absolutely fine. Let's not just talk about Hello, Hello for the entire Touch of Evil podcast.
For anyone listening in America who doesn't know what Hello, Hello.
Check Hello, Hello out on... it's not racist because they take the piss out of everyone. That's how it gets away with it. They take the piss out of the... It's for any non-British listeners, it's an hilarious comedy set in Nazi-occupied France. But anyway, again, let's stop talking about Hello, Hello.
Anyway.
So, Janet Leigh, who incidentally would have made a fantastic Helga. But anyway...
Very good. Very good.
Very good performance from Janet.
She's quite a strong character.
Yeah,
she stands up for herself. But she's got this great kind of... you can sense that it is all kind of a mask.
A vulnerability,
And underneath that she's actually terrified. She portrays that really, really well. Especially when she gets trapped in this hotel. And, you know, she's putting on this kind of veneer of... you know, being dominant and kind of like not trying to be taken in by these guys, but then quickly it kind of falls away as she realizes she's completely outnumbered. It's a really good little...
There was just a rising sense of dread.
Yes,
when she's there. It's quite uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah.
There's one scene sort of which kind of finishes that whole sequence of scenes at this abandoned hotel where she basically gang come into a room and that's horrible. And Mercedes McCambridge, little cameo performance. I must admit, they were talking about her as this massive actress. I've not actually heard of her. Have you?
No, I haven't.
No, that's... Well, thank God I'm not. I was going to try and pretend that I knew all about her, but in the kind of... When I was reading about it, it's just like... And of course, they amazingly got an uncredited appearance by Mercedes McCambridge. I'm like, yeah, cool. But anyways, but she has a really creepy line where they like hold her legs and she just says... I want to watch. And it's like, oh, what are they going to do to her? Anyway. So this is, I'm not quite sure if we mentioned it, but one of the last film noir films, one of the kind of classic film noir films before they become neo-noir, I guess.
Yeah, I guess this is just on the cusp of the 60s, and then suddenly it was all westerns and people in caveman bikinis.
Yeah, that was all films in the 60s.
Oh, that was basically the two
and Beatle films.
And
that was
and Barbarella.
But it certainly seems that it definitely could be. It could have been made in the early 40s, late 30s, early 40s.
But it does feel surprisingly modern, just because of the kind of unusual camera angles and the kind of real. With the opening tracking shot as well. We have to talk about the opening tracking shot.
Oh, yeah. We'll come to that in a second.
But it just does feel like it's kind of got quite a modern sensibility. The only thing being perhaps that it is a little bit slow in places.
I think also just... I suppose it's the style of dress, the style of the way characters talk. I mean, there's a couple of kind of greasers in this. You know, like leather jackets and... which I guess is the kind of really only sense that it's the 50s. Because if without those characters, it could have easily been set in the 40s.
Yeah, I suppose so.
One thing also, I mean, to me also, this actually is perhaps what dates the film slightly, even though Orson Welles, I think, had quite a, shall we say, liberal attitude to things like drugs and marijuana and things like that, it has a slight air of those kind of hysterical 50s drug binge hell, you know, like, oh, you know, little Jimmy took one toke on a marijuana, funny cigarette, and then became a crazed killer. There is a sort of touch of that about the proceedings.
Yeah, it's true. Drugs!
I did expect to see, like, a close-up on a man's face, and he's sweating loads, and you see, like, him imagining, I don't know, a monster or something. Other than that, it could have been a 40s film.
That opening shot, we have to mention it. One of the most famous in cinema history. It's an amazing bit of tension. I mean, it reminded me a lot of kind of early Hitchcock. And I think Hitchcock had a similar device, actually, in one of his films where there was a bomb and, you know, you didn't know when it was going to explode.
Maybe Sabotage?
I think it was Sabotage, yeah. But so it starts off the opening scene with a bomb gets placed into the boot of this this car. It's the mayor of this town, the border town.
No, it's not the mayor.
Is it not the mayor?
No. It's kind of an American industrialist.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, so it gets in the boot of the car, and then you just kind of, the camera pans back, and it goes across the rooftops, and you just follow the car kind of as it moves along the road and towards the border of, with the US. And it just goes on for ages, doesn't it? It's about 3.5 minutes or something.
And
just
there
continuous.
Is a cast of about 50 people. Involved in this. There's carts moving in front, other cars.
So amazing.
People just walking around the street.
Yeah. It's just amazing.
It did take hundreds of attempts there, I think. I think they just did it over and over again over a night. Wasn't that the last attempt?
Yes.
You could just about see dawn.
The sun was just coming up. Yeah,
just seeing dawn breaking.
I read that apparently they kept having to retake because the customs officer kept fluffing his lines. God. Can you imagine how annoyed you'd be with that one
actor?
Well,
just imagine the pressure he was under.
Right, so I've got to say, hello, Hank, or something like that. I can't remember what he says now. And every time he got it wrong, the cast must have been glaring daggers at him.
Well, I think in the end, Orson Welles just said, if you can actually, like, just mouth what you think the line is and we'll dub it. No, it's just don't say stop and say sorry, Mr. Welles, which I think you've done about 7 times. But yeah, it's incredibly impressive from a filmmaking point of view. Just how
really good. And the way it builds tension as well, because you know the bomb's going to explode.
So it's happening, it's building up to something happening. I mean, it wasn't quite clear exactly what he put in. Well, no, it was, doesn't it? It opens up with, you kind of see your bomb.
It's clear, but then, you know, the car goes out of shot a couple of times and you're not sure if it's going to blow up then.
Yeah,
and then
it comes back into
shot and then it gets stopped by some people and you think, oh, if it goes up now, it's going to kill all these people. And yeah, it's really, really, really well done.
And one thing we didn't actually mention, we watched the kind of 1998 version of this film.
Oh, yeah, because there's been a few different versions.
Yeah, the original cut... Orson Welles, poor Orson Welles. He's never had much luck with studio interference. I mean, that's apparently why he filmed most of it at night, because he just presumed studio bods wouldn't want to hang around at night. And he was right, so you got minimal interference at night, but then afterwards, basically, they just cut it to shreds and sacked him, effectively sacked him off the film and got someone else to come and direct a couple of kind of replacement scenes.
Madness.
But apparently there was a big comedy subplot.
Yeah, I read about this. He filmed loads of comedy scenes with the Grandy family, didn't he?
Yeah. And those were the things were cut. And he actually was actually that it's a good idea. You know, that actually makes the film better.
And I do think actually some of them was kind of surviving, comedy scenes with some of the Grandy family actually don't really work that well. They're probably some of the weakest bits of the film.
Mm. I mean. Yeah, no, I think this has come up a couple of times before in our podcast where I don't think it's always necessarily a bad thing sometimes for a studio to have some say. You know, sometimes a director can be too close to a project and needs outside people to say, actually, I think that's not working, you know, you need to cut this, cut that.
Like Zardoz,
yeah. Whereas with this film, it was just that those cuts were made, and then Orson Welles created this kind of famous 58-page memo where he said, just gave a long list of recommendations and changes and things you'd like to keep and things like that to change again. And the 1998 version of the film was produced using that memo as a guide. So even though it's not exactly how Orson Welles would want it, it's kind of closest as we're going to get.
Yeah.
So, for example, that at the beginning there were credits, and now credits are all at the end. So that opening tracking shot is the first thing you see, which I think is the right decision.
Definitely, yeah, definitely.
Get straight in there.
Speaking of Orson Welles, I've got a great idea for a movie.
Okay.
You're gonna love this.
Let's hear this great idea for a movie.
You're going to love this one. So, one of the sad things about Orson Welles is that...
He's dead.
He's dead. But what if he wasn't? Citizen Kane 2.
What's the tagline?
He was dead, but he got better.
Already taken. You can't steal Crank taglines.
It was specifically Crank 2, not Crank 1. So.
Well, yeah, that's still stealing.
Maybe he was a bit dead, then got well.
Then got, yeah, slightly better.
Slightly better. I'm imagining Citizen Kane, Charles Foster Kane, reanimated with a kind of robo exoskeleton. Using DNA technology, we bring him back, and he just goes on the rampage in the search for Rosebud, the mythical sled.
Well, that's Richard. Spoiler alert, you just ruined Citizen Kane.
Oh, everyone knows. It's in The Simpsons. If it's in The Simpsons, it's fine.
Rosebud! You would just say that the whole way through.
Yeah, basically. There's only one line in it.
See, if you would accept some notes, Lewis, I mean, I would prefer...
Nope, it's perfect as it is.
Rather than still searching Rosebud, I think Rosebud should be a stage now that uses like a snowball. But, this time, it speaks. It's kind of got a cool American voice. That's got it because it's got a computer in it.
That does make it better. That makes it so much better. That's really good. So basically, Rosebud is his Batmobile.
Yeah, and he sort of almost like he raps.
Oh, that is so good. So there's a Kane rap in the middle.
that's exactly it. Yeah.
This film writes itself.
And then at the end, Unicron appears in the sky.
Unicorn, of course, the planet-sized transformer voiced by Orson Welles in his final film.
One of his greatest works.
Right.
Oh dear.
Well, you like Transformers, though, didn't you? It affected you
deeply. Yes. So, yes, that is a good idea for a movie.
Yay!
So we're doing it.
Brilliant. So apart from Orson Welles, I think one of the standout performances is Marlene Dietrich.
Yeah.
So I think she was close to retirement at this stage, I think. This is one of her last films, I think.
She's like an old gypsy brothel owner, isn't she?
An old gypsy lady.
An old gypsy brothel. I mean, I know it's a terrible cliche. How many films have old gypsy brothel owners? Transformers the movie, that had one. It's a classic cinema character, but there's two things. It's the way she had those eyes, her eyes, just the way she looks.
Those big bedroom eyes.
Well, not bedroom eyes, it's more like, or perhaps bedroom eyes that have seen too many bedrooms, Lewis. Do you know what I mean? She's seen too much life.
Oh, I see what you mean.
She's just like got kind of almost... To say hangdog is the wrong way. She's kind of just like a...
Haunted.
A haunted, far away look in her eyes. And she's always on a smoke.
I've seen it all before.
On a cig. She looks like a kind of gypsy, glamorous version of
People
Doc
who
Cotton.
Listen in America aren't going to know what the hell we're talking about
what's
now.
What's your obsession with cracking the American market? You got this idea that we've got these legion of American followers who are just going, what? I don't... Get the podcast off! Me doing that accent will have got them off. But
got them off.
Yeah.
Sexually. So,
but I'm sure we don't have any American listeners.
They're none all, at all.
Well, probably maybe like one. If you're an American, write in. Email us at the usual address. With a picture of you with your arm round the Statue of Liberty wearing a cowboy hat in a hot dog.
It's a bit of a Mexican accent.
Yeah, with Charlton Heston Mexican. Yes, it's a great performance from it. She has like is it three or four key scenes?
Yeah, she's only in it with about three.
Yeah,
scenes,
and it's like, and she has a past with Orson Welles' character, the police detective, and she just almost like, it's almost like she's outside the film and just occasionally commentating on what's going on. There's a scene where she predicts his future by basically saying he has no future. And then she has the last line of the film.
Killer line.
He was some kind of man. It's just a great line. And if that's not on Orson Welles' gravestone, there is a crime. Because there is something about that line, the way she sees it. You know, he said, what could you say? Man? He was some kind of man.
Yeah. What can you say about people?
And that's just, it's just brilliant ambiguous.
It's just that kind of world weariness of the whole thing.
So, weaknesses?
So, probably the biggest weakness for me was the guy who played the hotel night manager.
Dennis Weaver.
Dennis Weaver. That's right. He was like, he kind of plays this slightly mentally disabled kind of night manager. And he just does it so over the top.
Yeah. He's
really chewing that scenery.
It stands out. But I think it was written for him, wasn't it, that role?
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah.
My God, it stands out like a sore thumb. It's such a broad kind of comic.
Is it meant to be funny?
I don't know. I completely agree, though. I don't think it works at all.
It doesn't, no. And I think it goes back to perhaps the original vision of the film that Welles had of perhaps more comedy moments in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just feels uncomfortable. It's like, am I meant to be laughing at this?
The only bit he kind of works quite well is when he is with like the greasers in, they're kind of intimidating him.
Yeah.
And he's okay then, because he's like, I'm the night guy, I have to be here. And they're like, you don't have to be here. Why don't you go and make yourself food? And he goes, I brought my lunch. Yeah, that's okay. That works quite well. But when he's...
Yeah, it's just weird. It's kind of creepy, funny, camp. I don't know. It's just strange.
So would you recommend this little film, Lewis?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly one of all Welles's best films, apart from Citizen Kane 2 and Hello, Hello, the Movie.
I too would recommend it. I think I would say don't go in thinking it's the greatest film ever made. I mean, actually, from what I read about what Orson Welles felt about this film, was that he just was like, oh, this is just quite a nice, easy film to watch. Apparently it was like his favourite film to do. So because he just had people he liked in it. Until he got the sack at the end, he had minimal interference from the studio.
Yeah.
It was relatively simple. Yeah, it's a complicated plot in some ways, but it's not deliberately obtuse in too many ways. If you just sit and watch and concentrate, you can follow what's going on.
Yeah.
But I don't think it reinvents anything. It's not a game changer like, say, Citizen Kane was. It's just a well put together film.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the techniques from Citizen Kane are used again. You know, it's definitely Welles' trademark, you know, the kind of slightly crazy camera angles and the very long shots, and, you know, it's all stuff that he pioneered in Citizen Kane.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, good film. Enjoy it. Definitely recommend it. Definitely recommend it.
Excellent.
Excellent.
So I think that probably brings us to the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you've got any recommendations for us, please write in at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com, and you can check out our blog at 101films.wordpress.com,
and from there you can follow us on Twitter and join our Facebook group.
Twitter, it's at 101films.
Yeah, and just put 101films into the Facebook. Just go to the blog and just click on the links. That's the easiest thing. Get our hits up.
Yeah. Okay, that's it from us.
Yep.
See you next time.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
You know, bizarrely, Charlton Heston ended up recording the narration for some highly classified military films about how to like use certain equipment and stuff about nuclear weapons.
Really?
And for 6 years, Charlton Heston had one of the highest security levels in American security you could have.
It was like
Q level security clearance.
Yeah. Wow.
So he like narrated, I guess, like And if a nuclear war happens, you have to do this. Yeah. Take your cyanide pill now.
I'm surprised they got such a high-profile actor to do it, really.
I thought that as well. What would be the equivalent of now? I don't know. Getting someone like The Rock to do, to do the voiceover.